Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Unleashing Deepin podcast. My name is Tyler. I am the host, and today I am really excited. We've got a new guest on the pod, someone I've kind of been watching from afar on Twitter, learning a lot about wireless in general, and he's actually coming representing an awesome project that we've had on, going to give us some really great updates. We've got Russ from XNet here. Russ, how you doing?
Good, Tyler. Happy to be here. It's been a very crazy past 3 weeks.
Oh, absolutely. You guys have been growing exponentially. There's been so many things coming out about partnerships and just traction and progress, and we're excited to see that. So this is the perfect time to do a conversation with you and have a little bit of an update chat, frankly, about what XNet's doing. As I alluded to during the introduction, you are definitely one of the people in the space that I've been sort of learning from afar. You've got a pretty decorated background, I guess you could say, with being a telephony engineer, telco engineer at Verizon. You kicked off your DY career at Hexagon. So maybe we can start by, before we get into some of the XNet stuff, can you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, kind of what you've been doing in the telco space for all this time?
Yeah. I really started, you know, really the first part of my career working in telco. So I started working at Verizon Wireless as a regular, what they called kind of a data center engineer, you could say, for regular people. They call it a MITSO, a mobile telephone switching office. And from there, I started there in the 3G days, and then we converted the network over to 4G, and eventually worked my way up to being a principal engineer. So as a principal engineer, I was working on the mobile core. I was in charge of multiple data centers in multiple states, and then later on, they had me work on their international cloud platform as well. So I worked with a team of engineers across the country and across the world to stand up services, work on the mobile core, really help Verizon grow and keep up with capacity for all the I'll say unlimited demand for data that keeps going up and up and up every year. And then after that, I also worked for a little bit at US Cellular, really helping them to protect their network, make sure it was resilient, because we had a lot of attacks coming in. You know, there were thousands, tens of thousands of attacks per day against the company. So make sure that they were well protected.
Yeah. Definitely an interesting backstory, and I'm sure it really helped sort of pave the path for getting into DUI. So what was your first like Web3 experience? Because I know prior to XNet, you were at Hexagon Wireless, and they, for folks who don't know, they were probably the first like DUI-specific deployment company, maybe if not the first, one of the early pioneers in it. How did you get into this like Web3 decentralized wireless space?
Yeah, so I've been watching the space for a while. You know, I was you know, an early dreamer of Helium for ubiquitous, affordable communication services, and kind of jumped on LoRaWAN kind of late, really. I still run a nationwide LoRaWAN fleet, but I got in quite late. But when it got to CBRS, I was like, hey, I know this stuff. And I was jumping on these long Twitter spaces and was on there, you know, as long as they'd have me on, talking about the industry. And after that, eventually got some introductions, people connected. And I got connected through Alex, the CEO of Hexagon Wireless, that got seed funding and said, hey, we really need somebody who knows this network, knows this industry, can figure out the problems that we have to get us deployed nationwide. We want to have the biggest, most extensive kind of fleet of radios across multiple projects. So Hexagon, you know, went really deep into pollen, which ended up being a huge strategic mistake for the company, but did have, you know, $2 million of funding to start up and build all that. So it was along for that ride, worked with a fantastic team of people, and then also worked after Hexagon was dissolved. They ended up taking on a lot of the assets that were left over and continue to run those sites today and work with a lot of those existing partners across multiple states to keep that network alive and running and introduce them to new projects as it makes sense. And then that kind of leads me into, you know, what, you know, I got started with XNet. I was following XNet for several years. XNet's been around for over 2 years. So it's not it's kind of an old project in the space now.
Yeah. Now, I remember back on some of those early Twitter spaces when I was trying to come up to speed on the telephony space, because it was not where my initial background was by any means. And you were like the point person that I felt like I was getting the most insights and knowledge around, because you've obviously been doing it for a while. But because you've been on the engineering side, like, you really know how these things work. So anyway, for those who have probably listened, you can thank Russ for all the knowledge and gems that he's dropped on these conversations and spaces over the years. They've been pretty remarkable.
I'm happy to share knowledge. I'm pretty open. You know, there's obviously people in the space that we disagree sometimes, but the majority of the I worked with and talked with many of the projects in the space, whether it's, you know, obviously I mentioned pollen, but also really wireless, also Carrier One, Anyone who's really trying to get to this goal of ubiquitous, affordable communication, especially I think with cellular, I love to talk with them about. And obviously, what I'm doing now is a big part of that world now with Wi-Fi offload.
Yeah. So maybe we can jump into, after Hexagon, all the work that you had done, how did you actually get full-time or join the XNet team? What was sort of the genesis that sparked that?
Yeah. So I was one of the few people who joined almost all their AMAs during the dark times, the bear market. So, and I was always giving them feedback, and also, if I wanted to, confront them a little bit on something, or if I thought they were going kind of the wrong direction on something, give them that feedback directly. Because I was really trying to find deals out there because, with the people that I work with who've been with me on this journey for the past 2 years, I'm trying to give them options and saying, hey, I want you to work with these networks and it's going to give you a reliable stream of revenue that you can depend on and you're not going to get burned. And luckily, it's been a pretty good relationship with most of those partners out there. Most of the people out in this space have been pretty good. And so XNet was one I've had my eye on for a while because it made sense to me that the cost model of what we call decentralized wireless, which has now become DPIN, which has now become crowdsourced coverage, is the newest term that's out there, which I love, that people seem to really like, and hopefully this one sticks, is saying, hey, we have a really low model for delivering high-grade cellular communications, and we just got to find a way to scale that, keep the quality at a high enough bar to where they'll pay for it. I thought that XNet's take on that, being kind of a neutral partner, was very innovative because no one else has really said, no, we want to be fairly neutral in how we do this. We work with all the networks. In fact, we'll even offload other networks that most people would see as competitors. There's no technical reason not to. So I thought that's a good key insight. Now, one thing that I disagreed with the team on, and it turned out to be true, is getting a offload deal. I believe the original estimate was like 6 months. It took more like 2 years, which is exactly what everyone expected from the industry. And now, since they literally just announced it, I think an hour before this call, that they have their first signed offload deal. For the time being, they're keeping it confidential, which large network it is. But that will be, it's signed, it's done. The technical, we want to make sure that data is flowing live across CBRS radios. But that was a very hard thing to do, to be the first one to break the wall that's coming down. And saying, like, now we've got our first major carrier that says, I'm all in on CBRS offload. They're already all in on Wi-Fi offload, which turned out, I think it's been now about maybe 2.5 months since we launched Wi-Fi offload. And, right now live, we've got hundreds of units sold. I've got about 200 units live and in the field. Right now live, just on our pro units, we've got almost 1,800 cell phones on it right now doing offload.
Wow.
So it's doing really well. I'm going to have to look at our other fleet of radios too. We've got some different. We're also neutral with the vendors we support. So we have different backends that report all their live data that comes up. So obviously we do Epoch updates every 2 weeks and the Explorer too, which is being updated to show fresh live data. So people have a good sense of, hey, how am I doing? And goal is to have that be live one day, but starting out have weekly updates. But I can obviously look at everything live, but that's network has just been on fire. People love the AT&T offload, offloading to all these different networks and saying, hey, you've got 250 million potential customers. You just got to go find them and get those locations put in.
Right.
I really put a lot of pressure on the team, and I think they really delivered a really solid product at a very low price point. It's at $199. It's the cheapest Wi-Fi unit you're going to find in the space with very high specs. It has 4x4 MIMO, which is frankly pretty rare in the space. It takes 300 cell phones. Most even busy spaces, you're not going to have more than 50 at a time. Like at ETH Denver, we had 50 phones on. It was kind of our peak there, even though we had a completely packed room.
Yeah.
So that was, and I think demoing it live, don't tell people, show people how it works. So we always go to, like I was just in a big boardroom meeting just this week, actually, and where we just brought it into the meeting and showed it to them live. And it worked right on their AT&T phones. Like they saw it. There weren't so many questions about, what do you mean I just jump on? What do you mean it just takes the phone data? But like, just like that on your phone, then they kind of get it. Because this is something most people aren't aware of that is even possible. So it's really opening up a lot of eyes and like, what are the opportunities of this? So this is spinning off a lot of conversations especially that it's not only kind of the main stuff you think of with AT&T, but it's also FirstNet. So now we've got firefighters and police officers and anyone who works in emergency services saying, oh, you can offload our data as well. And get, they really don't care about the money. They care about better service. They're like, wow, I can actually in the firehouse have good service. That's amazing. I've never had that. I've always had to manually jump onto Wi-Fi, although we've got there in the firehouse. So that's really what I wanted to come in to do is be kind of say, you know, from my experience working with multiple networks and background in the industry, let's have the lowest cost unit in the space with the highest return on the investment. That's easy to use. It's a full kit. Everything's included. You get the PoE injector, which is almost half the size of regular PoE injectors. It's branded. Everything is white. It looks like something that Apple designed and put out. Yet it's at the lowest price point in the space. So that was my big push with the Pro. And of course, there are more expensive, what we'll say, enterprise level or professional grade units. Those are much more expensive. Those are going to be over $1,000. Some of them are $3,000 or $4,000 each if you want a special order equipment for special events, which we're doing as well. So XNet is going to be up at a lot of special events, such as some of the biggest music festivals in the country, both on the West Coast and in the Midwest. It's also going to start coming up in we've got concerts coming up. We've got political rallies coming up. We've got stadiums coming up. Like there's so many opportunities right now where people are saying, I just have to add XNet to it and it starts paying me. Yes. And it works with almost everything. Yes.
Yeah. I love how simple and just straightforward the value proposition is. I'd love to dive into some of the hardware stuff in a second. One of the, you know, and you kind of touched on it a little bit with the fact that you were helping with your TradWide background, sort of level set expectations around these things don't happen in 6 months. They take, you know, potentially 2 years. In this case, it took exactly 2 years. Were there other sort of TradWide disciplines that you brought to XNet that you're sort of helping shape some of the strategic initiatives at the company right now?
So it's kind of interesting. Out of all the projects out there, the people involved in XNet, like Rich Duvall, the CEO, who came from Google Loon, he's got a telecom background because that project was putting basically cellular radios on hot air balloons and getting that working. And then another one of the co-founders, Tom, he's actually done several startups already in the telecom industry in both Europe and Asia. So this team has been kind of refreshing that there's so many people here from telecom. It's been more like we all have the same background. It's just we've worked in different areas. Like I've got hands-on experience in the mobile core, which is a little different from Tom, who's got a hand up experience creating like data roaming marketplaces in Asia. Like that's something I didn't even know somebody was building that, you know, and he already did like a startup and sold it in that space. He's like, yeah, I know all about that space. I'm an expert. I'm one of the few experts in the world on that technology and how that works. And then, you know, we've got other people on the team too. And, we've got an incredible team of engineers. People may not even be aware of who are doing incredible work, on the mobile core, incredible work on the Wi-Fi offload technology behind the scenes, making sure that every byte that's possible for us to pay out, that byte goes through and gets processed and that gets paid out. So, a lot of shout outs to our tech team, Miguel, Simon, Donald and operations and legal, like that. There's as well as multiple contractors, and we're always hiring, so we're probably gonna, who knows, maybe this week we'll probably have two more people on the team. We've got another programmer, I don't know his name yet, he's joining the team, so we've got multiple people coming in and it's growing pretty quickly. The core team is fairly small, but everybody on it is a exceptional person and really high performer. So there really hasn't been too much of a, like versus I'd say when I talk to other projects that are in space who don't have a traditional telecom background, come from a different space. Often this is kind of hard to, this is kind of a hump to get over how things are traditionally done. If you don't have at least one person on the team who's got that deep background. And usually there is at least one person. Carrier One is several people who know the space really well. Helium is people like Boris knows the industry very well. So you find those out there. Really is kind of an exception. I haven't met anybody in their team with a strong telecom background, at least not yet. In Flakes Mobile, I haven't met their team yet, so I'm not. I think they come from strong telecom background. So, yeah. My big part in the space is really just try to work with them all. And I'm more of trying to just get the space to the point where it's affordable and everyone can participate. Kind of the dream of let's unlock these networks and let people, as long as they stick to building a high quality network. I don't want something, you know, like on dial up. Something that people can actually use. I think there's just tremendous potential there. From a lot of this came from my frustration in the space from working mostly at Verizon Wireless, just things were extremely expensive and extremely slow. And I just thought that there's so much money and inefficiencies that could be eliminated with a different operating model.
Right. Well, and that, you call it crowdsource coverage, call it deep in decentralized wireless. It really is like the perfect model for solving a lot of these inefficiencies, which is quite exciting to see it happen in real time, specifically with your project and a bunch of others across the space in different verticals. I think one of the things that's pretty unique about Web3 builders in particular is that they come to the table with this, like, we're going to totally blow up the entire world and do something that's revolutionary and world changing. And I think one of the sort of the counterweights, especially within the telecom space, is that there's so much legacy infrastructure and all these big companies that have just death grips on the industry, that trying to kind of balance both sides, I imagine, is quite contentious. And so having a bunch of experts on the team has got to be invaluable for that.
Yeah, it's fantastic because a lot of us agree on a lot of stuff that happens out there. But I think what everybody gets is the vision, like the vision of affordable communication everywhere. How do we get there? We got to drive costs out of these networks. Like I can say for many years when I was at Verizon Wireless, cost cutting was a huge part of it. Like, how can we operate more efficiently? And just the way the company was set up made it, frankly, impossible to eliminate large costs out of their operating model. It's one reason why cell phone plans are so expensive. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of costs to running a network at that size. Now I give them some credit. They're running, I think they still have their 3G network up, their 4G network, and their 5G network up, all running together at once, which is a very, very hard thing to do and something that the big carriers are very good at. However, the way they operate is mostly done based on what they're told to by their suppliers, which is, you know, like Nokia and Ericsson, the big players in the space. And everything they do is extremely expensive and slow. So we're just like, no, let's open this up. The standards are open. There's lots of manufacturers who want to participate in this. We have some fantastic open source projects that can run mobile cores. We can virtualize it all. We can move much quicker. We can just drive so much cost out of this to where it doesn't take 6 months and $500,000 minimum to get a site up. How about I can get, like right now, you can get, how long does it take to get a, you know, any type of, you know, crowdsource coverage site up? You can get Wi-Fi up in minutes.
Right.
I can get a CBRS site up. Well, depending on how the project processes CPI, I can get that up in a day. I can schedule it out and get it done in a week. I can have legal agreements signed in days. You know, that's crazy in telecom. It's like you guys are nuts. How is it possible to operate that quickly?
Yeah, no, it's incredible. And you love to see it, both the vision and the possibilities, and it happening in real time and proving that model out, which is so incredible. So I'd love to, we talked a little bit about all of the progress and some of the things you guys have been doing since we had Rich on the podcast last time, which has been almost a year now. So there's been quite a bit of change. Can you, especially in the last 2 months, so much has happened with the project. Can you give us kind of the 500-foot overview of all of the changes that have happened, all of the traction, progress, and then we can start diving into some of the specifics from there?
Yeah, it's funny how it just actually just changed today with a big update. So 500-foot view is really starting this year. There was a big pivot NextNet to say, hey, Wi-Fi offload is cheaper and quicker to deploy than CBRS. And right off the gate, got several carrier partners interested in saying, hey, we want to work with you and build this and do this very quickly. We're like, okay, because it took, we're year two right now trying to do it on CBRS. And basically in about a month, we were able to get basically proof of concept up and running. Now, they've been testing Wi-Fi offload for about 6 months. Like that wasn't actually a whole new idea. It just wasn't as big of a priority as CBRS, because it always seemed like CBRS was just around the corner. We're going to have this agreement. We're going to be done. But that didn't end up happening until literally like today.
Wow.
So Wi-Fi offload and really where I started joining the team, saying, hey, let's have an affordable unit. I want it to be under everybody else's. So $199 through a 2000 XNet token bonus as well, which basically cuts the cost in half. As long as it's active for at least one epoch, so 2 weeks, plug it in, make sure it's checking in, which is not hard to do. But wherever you put it, it should start earning something. As long as it's not like home indoors for your own family plan, you don't want to do that. That's going to earn the minimum, possibly as low as zero. They're not trying to offload your house. That's what your personal Wi-Fi is for.
Sure.
But if you want to point it outside at your neighbors or, you know, a business nearby, that's okay. Then it's going to pick stuff up. So I came in to really say, let's just have a really efficient, really affordable device that is easy to use, plug and play. Everything's included in the kit. And let's just make this as simple as possible to where you need to know very, very little about the space. This could be your first crypto project you've ever done. and it's plug and play. So it's plug and play on the unit. It just needs internet and power, uses 25 watts, less than a light bulb. And then after that, you put in a registration form, and that has stuff like your wallet address for payouts, the address where you installed it. Of course, there's some back-end verification that that information is accurate, but it's a good check-in system. And then that starts earning. So it takes, you know, usually within the first 24 hours, we'll get information back from the carrier saying, looks good, your information looks accurate, speed looks right, because they test it as well. They control kind of the handoffs from the phones, and they're measuring, you know, what the speeds are, what the quality is. They're kind of a double check of what we tell them. Because we'll say, hey, this site's getting 100 meg. Sometimes they tell us it's better. They're like, no, actually, you're getting over 150 meg. This is even better. But they also do the opposite and say, I'm only seeing 10 meg. Something's wrong here. It could be where the phones are. Could also just be there's a problem with the connection. So that has. So I brought into really, and that's really what I own and have most insight into, is the Wi-Fi offload and growing that program. So very excited about that. We have many more carriers coming or onboarding them as soon as we can. And we're going international. We plan to go international this year. So we'll be throughout North America. And then we've got several, we actually just decided on our short list of European countries we're going to launch in as well. All of our Wi-Fi units today are already certified for international use. So we can start selling our pros today internationally. They're actually already sold internationally. We just have to put our specific offload agreements and config on them. So go to the carriers, get that direct roaming agreement, start selling them in that country, go on to the next country. So we're really excited about that expansion that's coming up. We also got fleet management software incoming. It's still in active development because we've got people doing now massive fleets of 50 plus units or more. So that should be out hopefully in about 2 to 4 weeks. So that's going to be public so we can manage their DY fleets and say, hey, and that manages both the CBRS units and the Wi-Fi units. But really right now, the demand is really on the Wi-Fi side. So take your payments in, split those up, and push those out. It'll launch being Polygon crypto native because Extend is a Polygon project like Demo and HiveMapper to where those splits will all be handled. So we're very excited about that coming out. I don't have a preview yet. I've got some rough screenshots. We're still working with the developers to fine-tune it, but we're very excited about that. That was announced in the AMA today for the first time as well. So we've got fleet solutions for people who want to do big deals because we've got a lot of big deals kind of knocking on our door in multiple states that are coming in. So the whole Wi-Fi program is exploded. The number of YouTubers who covered it, like Tech Hustler, they were really, you know, and several other YouTubers as well who've been covering it and gave us some really fair coverage. I mean, they kind of went into it. So we do understand that, like, our Explorer can be a little confusing. Like there's coverage areas for CBRS, but Wi-Fi is nationwide. We don't put a location restriction on it because AT&T pays for it nationwide. You could be at top of a mountain at camp, and they'll pay for offload, which is crazy.
Right.
You don't need any approval to go up there. But CBRS, proof of coverage rewards, those are only in selected hexes, in selected cities. As the carriers have told us, this is where we really want the most coverage. So we're like, all right, we're going to get people there. But I'm excited there about CBRS exploding as well with the first offload partner, because now you can put those up, you know, even without proof of coverage rewards and start earning Xnet, which is really exciting. So that's the big thing was the Wi-Fi program, and it's just exploded. We've got two manufacturers right now we're public with. We have several more. We're evaluating their technology and the units so that we have different price points, different capabilities. Some units have insane range, insane amount of phones. So like the Pro can handle 300 phones, but we've got other units that can handle 2,500 phones. So on a single access point, which is just crazy. But that's what you need for a stadium.
Sure. No, 100%. Yeah, that's amazing.
A lot going on.
Yeah, you guys definitely have your hands full. You talked about going international with Wi-Fi, and you were really intentional around trying to have different products and different price points and whatnot. For talking about sort of this mass market adoption, what is left to be seen, if you will, for getting that mass adoption specifically with Wi-Fi?
Yeah, that's been something that we've been focusing on really, you know, showing, not telling people how's it happening. So really what we've been doing, number one, is kind of getting the word out. We think that this is an insane ROI for most people. Typically these units in good locations will pay for themselves in 1 to 2 months. Wow. And kind of getting that word out to the community, especially with the token bonus. We are going to be at many different industry events that are coming up for a variety of sectors. So there's a couple coming up with some major retailers. They're looking at adding XNet to with all their franchisees. There's stuff coming up with internet service providers, and that's a whole new thing I can mention. So we've got our first ISP conversion program that kicked off with an ISP here in the Midwest. So we're taking their existing Wi-Fi and just adding XNet to it and paying them for that. We're actually already starting to pay them. So that's really exciting. Our second ISP, they haven't signed yet, but they verbally said they're all in. So they can't wait to do it next. So we've got our second ISP. And for that program, we usually want 300 access points or more. So once those are all onboarded, just explosive growth in the network size. One thing that I'm really proud of the XNet team and that I wish more projects had was a DIY component and not locking everything down so that nobody can rescue the unit, rescue it from the dump. Like if you can't use it with that specific project, there's no use for it. So we don't believe in that at all. In fact, all of our users own their devices and we're free to put them back to stock and let them log into it, manage it themselves. That includes all the Wi-Fi units. If anyone wants to leave XNet anytime, they can take it and use it as their personal Wi-Fi. We are, of course, going to remove the offloading component, but that's okay. It's their unit, they own it, and we believe they should have the rights to keep it because we really want to keep stuff, out of the dump as much as possible when people want to leave a project. And I'm going to be expanding that dramatically towards the end of this year to where we want to actually be able to have people onboard their existing Wi-Fi as well, even for, we'll say, prosumer grade equipment. So we'll be launching that later this year as another thing that we're working on. Because I really miss the DIY component of really the crypto space of being able to build your own miner. Like it's so hard to build your own miner these days. To do that, you got to be like on like compute platforms, or you got to be like an old school like GPU proof of work miner. But like no, you can do that in Wi-Fi. There's so much Wi-Fi out there, and you have to be a little more technical, obviously, to do it yourself on a prosumer grade unit. But that's another exciting program. I can't wait to get started on, and we're going to be we've already actually just talked to people this week who want to be a part of that program, so we're very excited about that. We're also open to work with other projects, so I'm already talking to other projects in the space who don't have Wi-Fi but would be happy to add XNet Wi-Fi to their project. So technically there's no issue with it. There's some business agreements we got to do because obviously there's a token exchange and bridging action that has to happen. We got to figure out how to fund that, but that's fairly a solvable problem that comes out. So we've got multiple partnerships cooking up towards the end of this year that I think those are going to come through to where you're going to see XNet like through other projects. So you might be earning from Wi-Fi from AT&T on let's say X project. Maybe it's an IoT project, maybe it's a sensor project, et cetera. But they say, oh, well, plug this in and you'll earn more of our tokens, but on the back end, it's actually going to be XNet. So that's really exciting too, and I like how that's one thing I'm really proud of the XNet team is that they're very open and transparent and willing to work with other projects and help them in the space. So it's I think the space is just going to get more and more exciting next year as more and more projects kind of realize how we're able to do this. But of course, we are scaling up very quickly and expanding very quickly, and we plan to be in more countries than anybody else, have more offload than anybody else, have more carrier partners than anybody else. And at the current trajectory we're on, I don't see how that couldn't happen.
Yeah, no, it's certainly looking that way. You touched on something that I'd love to circle back around on, which was conversion relationships with ISPs, or specifically the conversion program. For people who maybe don't know what that fully entails, can you kind of unpack what the value is for people that are part of the XNet ecosystem, or if they're maybe on, they're a customer with said ISP? Can you just kind of unpack what that actually looks like?
So internet service providers. So we do prefer ones that are a little more urban. We're not really looking for rural ones because we don't think they're really going to make anything, to be kind of blunt with them. But anyone that's near a city or an urban area, what we can do is we can say, hey, if you've got locations, especially with small businesses or retailers, proof of maybe some point of sale equipment or meeting spaces, what we can do there is take those access points. And we will add the XNet technology to it. So you still own the access points, you still control them, and all your existing services still work. Nothing like that changes. All that we do is we work with you on a technical integration, and there's some Q&A based on the specific vendor you're using. We work with almost all of them. There's just a couple that have a couple edge cases we have to work through depending on the vendor. But most of them are pretty easy. And basically, it might be running a script, it might be pasting a config. But within minutes, depending on what vendor they're using, all of their access points will then advertise the XNet offload. just like the ones that you can buy on XSense website. So it has that same capability, but you're adding it to your existing, you know, Aruba gear that's out there, or Alta gear, or Arista gear if you have Arista that's out there, or Ruckus gear, or Cambium. We work with almost pretty much any vendor. So again, with XNet, that's why I love XNet. We work with everybody who wants to work with us, which is good. Most company organizations are open to that. And we can say, okay, we'll onboard all of your access units. We just need your wallet. So currently it's crypto only. So all these ISPs are only getting paid in crypto, not cash. That's how it's likely going to be, you know, for the short-term future. But it also brings on the biggest enthusiasts in the space. And basically every epoch, everything that they offload gets paid to them. So like the first ISP I've been working with, we're offloading like a kid's soccer facility that's actually right next to an AT&T cell site.
Oh, wow.
So because it's indoors, they don't have a good experience. So they're paying us for offload, which is crazy. We thought we were going to earn anything. Like we told them, right, I was very upfront with them. I was like, you're next to a cell site. And they know that because AT&T actually pays them, because the ISP, it's actually on their property. So wow. Like they're right across the street. We're just going to try this because it's easy, because they wanted to test it themselves. They're like, hey, I just want to make sure this works. So we're going to do it across the street. I can go run over there. I have AT&T and jump on. And they did it and it worked. And we checked it the next couple of days and we're like, hey, you've got a couple of gigs there. And he's like, really? How many phones? I was like, you know, a couple dozen phones. He's like, that's interesting. He's like, because they should have like pretty close to full bars. Well, maybe they do outside, but not indoors. They don't. And the other thing is that's consistent, because AT&T, their pricing algorithm and how they pay, it's kind of a black box. It's opaque. They don't want us to know too much about how they figure it out, but we know that it's dynamic, and based on real-time demand. Most sites, it's going to be fairly consistent. So we say, do a 30-day test, and that gives you a really good setup. If you're going to get paid every day for 30 days, that's a good site. I'm not worried about them changing their mind. We have seen in rare cases, they pay for like the first 2 or 3 days and then stop paying. And they don't tell us why. They just say, hey, we want, sometimes they're like, actually, we have great coverage there. We want like 150 meg. And you can't get that without a lot of trouble. So like, all right, we're going to move on to the next site. So the ISP conversion program allows them to basically add XNet without spending any capital money. They only have to spend a small operational cost. And of course, we do an agreement with them. They do sign a contract with us as well that lays out all these things, who's responsible for what, where reliability is. And they keep the right to actually shut us down if they believe we're interfering with them, which should only happen if they're making too much money. So I mean, I'd love to say, hey, we're making so much money on XNet, it's affecting our network. We're like, that's all right. Let's just do some quality service stuff on the back end and we'll be good. Cause you want to have as much XNet traffic as possible. Cause every gig that goes through, you're getting paid for. It goes all the way actually down to 1/100th of a gig we pay. So be specific, gets laid out, gets paid out to them every 2 weeks. So we've got our first ISP doing that. I think we're going to have a waiting list pretty soon. Second ISP verbally said they're on board. We have to sign the contract just to make sure all the terminology is good, but it I don't see any issue why that would go forward. We've got several others that are coming in. So it's kind of funny. You wouldn't think there's that many crypto kind of friendly ISPs, but there actually are. You just got to find them.
That's amazing. So just to create a cursory explanation of exactly what's going on here. So if an ISP does the conversion program and you have a carrier offload partner, say it's AT&T, for example, a customer that's in that business facility who has AT&T will automatically be able to roam on just because it's working and they're using XNet, and that's sort of the beauty of the solution?
Yeah, it works just like our units. And so this works great. So the ISPs, they normally have like retail businesses. Anything that's a business, we say, let's turn it on, and you're going to start making additional revenue that from that location. And they love that. They're like, wow. So you're saying, they're already paying me for internet service. You're telling me now they're paying me for internet on top of the internet.
Yeah. Going forward in the future, I mean, that sounds like there's so much potential and opportunity there, because A, it doesn't increase any capital expenditure that the business might have, and it's a way to drive revenue into the business, and it creates a better experience for any of their customers. How much of your future business do you suspect will be through these ISP conversions versus actually selling hardware direct? Like, if you were to kind of speculate, what do you think that's going to look like in the future?
It's going to be it's going to be quite a race. You know, and I haven't really approached, you know, international ISPs, which are likely going to be working with us as well. Which one is going to be more? Kind of the retailers, independent deployers? I would say I'm going to bet it's going to be the mass professional deployers, which is kind of the space I came from, that are going to win, because some of the deployments coming up, like I mentioned earlier, sums with like retailers or franchisees, you unlock like a national franchise. I mean, that's 10 to 20,000 locations typically with a major franchise. So I think it's going to be actually the big deployers. And those are the people who I really like working with because we've known each other for several years in most cases and saying, okay, let's help you unlock these deals, get this revenue flow and help you manage these fleets and get those payouts going. I think it's going to be them that are going to drive a lot of it. But which one is going to be the biggest in the end? You know, there's a chance it could be just retailers, just regular people just putting up, you know, 5 to 10 units. It's really tough to say, but the best locations that earn the most, especially internationally, what I will say is like internationally, it's going to be a race to get to tourist traps because that is where the real money is. I can say that our rate should be very, very good if somebody goes to like Italy or Paris and puts up an XNet node in the future. Man, the amount of money they can make, I think could be 10 times what they make here at a similar site. Like the money that you can save carriers international roaming is almost insane. It's a lot. So, and the way that we're able to do it, that saves carriers a lot of money from their roaming, especially internationally, is just, the numbers are very attractive. So I actually think that because that's where most of the revenue is going to be, and I think that professional deployers are going to figure that out and how to get those locations and how to make those deals get done. I think that's where most of the growth will be because that's where most of the revenue will be in my opinion. But man, them and like independent people who just hear about this and want to put one in, or tell their friends about it. I mean, I think they're going to do a lot too. It's a very tough thing, but if you do it strictly on the numbers, those are locations that will earn the most in the future, internationally. And I think that's where I would place my bet. But I'll say right now, like we're on a mission to get to our first 1 million units or more of Wi-Fi. I can't see us being any less than that because we're going to be in dozens of countries at a minimum. So the amount of Wi-Fi units that will be is just, it's going to be big. It's going to be as big, and I think bigger than the old Helium LoRaWAN network when they were all turned on.
Wow. That 1 million milestone is pretty tantalizing, quite exciting. I'm sure you guys are going to get there probably even faster than you're anticipating, just seeing the trajectory over the last couple months.
it's scary. Yeah, that type of success is scary. We're not going to hit 1 million this year. That's not going to happen. But I know this year we're going to hit tens of thousands at a minimum. Just the ISP conversion program alone it can be tens of thousands, depending on how many we're able to offload onto XNet and how quickly we can do that. I mean, because some of these ISPs are just humongous. So, that's not even counting. But retail sales. I mean, I'm doing a tremendous amount with manufacturers who are just knocking on our door saying, "Hey, I'd love to sell 10,000 units."
Of course. You talked about a couple of the different providers. You know, one of the updates that we talked about offline was sort of bringing the Alta hardware into the mix. What are future hardware partnerships looking like? Are there any things that you can talk about or that might be public that we can share with folks?
Yeah, I'll share a little more because we're still doing testing with some vendors. But I've actually already shared some of this on the public Discord, so it's already public, so I can share quite a bit. So with Alta, we're going to have a new low-cost outdoor unit around June, and that's going to be significantly under $500. And have almost the same specs as the indoor. So it's going to have it can take up to 300 cell phones. It's going to be ruggedized for outdoor use. You can put it on a pole. It can take snow, rain, hail, everything but a bullet, and be able to basically start earning wherever you put it and have hundreds of feet of range outdoors. We're also testing some insanely high capacity units. We're talking like I was talking about 4x4 MIMO. We're going up to 8x8 MIMO, which is what we're going to need for like stadium deployments. So we're testing some of that gear coming up soon. Higher capacity radio. So I mentioned 2,500. We're trying to see maybe we can go to 3,000 or 3,500 phones per access point. You might actually need that for some insanely high capacity venues. Again, stadiums, special events, entertainers, like up here in the Midwest, we've got the biggest, one of the biggest music festivals in the country up here with Summerfest in downtown Milwaukee. So we've got a lot of festivals that are coming up that need these insanely high capacity units. Also is range. So we're also testing another unit from another manufacturer that can go 3,000 feet. And they tested that with a Samsung S10 and they went 3,000 feet. Wow. And I was like, that's incredible. Like that's like CBRS range. So, and I think that as long as the testing goes well, we're going to self-serve. Like they did all the testing on their end. We're like, we're going to just recreate that testing to make sure, because I don't want to just go by what the manufacturer tells me from my experience in the industry. But if I can recreate that, or even be fairly close to that, to where like, it's close enough to say it's 3,000 feet. That'll be amazing, because that's like CBRS. Like, you can go
Right.
3,000 feet. That's pretty far. That's a lot of range, and that's with a built-in integrated Omni antenna, and that's for less than $1,000. And I was like, that is a package. So you're telling me one of these units, and now it's not the highest capacity unit, because it's not designed for capacity. It's designed for range, but that can hold over 500 phones at one time, which is pretty good. I mean, 3,000 feet, I'm a little worried about being overwhelmed, but on range, you just can't beat that. So a lot of my talks to manufacturers are, you know, what is special about your portfolio? So like with Ruckus, they have insanely good antenna technology. Their antennas, they got like this super proprietary kind of algorithm antenna management unit that creates like 4,000 different coverage patterns dynamically based on where the phones are in real time. They've got some, you know, proprietary name for it and everything, but it's just like black magic kind of stuff. Like, how do they do that? You know, like, how are they able to just like dynamically change coverage? So it's no matter where it is or what the interference is, it's always the best possible coverage. It's really quite amazing. So that's the type of stuff that I'm bringing in, because, you know, Wi-Fi is a commodity until you go to what we're doing, which is extremely professional, high end, high capacity deployments. We also have Wi-Fi 7 units. In fact, we're talking with one manufacturer to actually be one of their first and largest Wi-Fi 7 deployments publicly. Hopefully that keeps going forward. I'm sure our testing will go really well. So Wi-Fi 7 is very exciting. I think we're going to be the first project that has officially supported Wi-Fi 7 in the space, but we'll see. Maybe somebody will beat me to it. That's fine. Then we'll just try to do it at a lower cost.
Sure. Do you have any timelines around Wi-Fi 7 for folks?
Yeah, so Wi-Fi 7, so it's, we already have evaluation units will be tested hopefully by the end of this month, and then deployments should be public. Everything goes according to plan around June. Customer live field testing will probably be closer to the fall. We'll have a full deployment that we can go that us, the manufacturer, will actually do a case study on it, publicly document it. There'll be videos on it and everything like that, but that's kind of dependent on all the testing going well and installation going as planned. But there's so much Wi-Fi 7 stuff going on with different manufacturers. We're going to do something with Wi-Fi 7 very, very quickly. So yeah, we already have units coming in. They're giving us like pre-production evaluation units. So
wow, it's very exciting. Fun to get your hands dirty. If you're kind of a technical geek, like I know a lot of people in this space are, getting your hands on with that.
It's kind of funny because, you know, we're just reminding them, hey, we're doing cellular offload, and like there are currently no phones that support Wi-Fi 7. It's very new. The phones will support it though, and where the sites where these will be installed, like these units will be there for 3 to 5 years. So I know Wi-Fi 7 will be useful, but it's like bleeding edge technology and density. So yeah, we always take that criticism, like, you know, how many phones use Wi-Fi 7? Wait for the next iPhone.
Yeah. I'm curious, with some of these really long range Wi-Fi units, do you see that potentially changing the landscape with CBRS a little bit? Obviously with CBRS, I assume that you'd be able to handle more phones through some of those hotspots, but with these really long range Wi-Fi units, like, how do you foresee that potentially kind of changing the deployment mix in the future?
Yeah. So we've had some, you know, I've been thinking about it too, like how to deploy it, how to put it out there. So you still can't beat like the range and the power of CBRS. And there's also some opportunities for doing licensed. It doesn't have to be just CBRS. You can do licensed spectrum as well. And I think that'll happen too. There's already multiple projects, I think, that already have licensed spectrum. So they're in the space. So that's really good, because then you have clean, good, clear, clean signal. And like if you're doing cellular, that can go miles of range. So I don't think anything's going to beat the coverage area. In terms of raw speed and capacity, it's hard to beat Wi-Fi as soon as you get within 500 feet. Wi-Fi can be pretty good. So it's really changed the mix. And, you know, I'm not really quite sure right now. I'm going to kind of do live field testing with our first offload partner for CBRS, now that that's going to be live here, hopefully by the next epoch, to where I can test it, kind of see how it behaves myself. One thing is that our agreements with CBRS and Wi-Fi are separate agreements. So we're going to have it's going to be kind of interesting starting out. Eventually, it will be very similar, but starting out, we're going to have different networks on CBRS and different networks on Wi-Fi. And then slowly over time, those are going to merge and be the same list. But initially, it'll be separate just because who's the early adopters for each one. Like AT&T was a huge early adopter with us here in the United States, which was fantastic. But we have a different early adopter for coming in for CBRS offload, which is good. I mean, I'm sure we'll have AT&T and T-Mobile and everybody else coming down too. All the networks love this technology, love the space, just because of how much money it's going to save them. They're very excited.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear. So Russ, one of the questions I'm sure people are curious about is, for those that are deploying on the Wi-Fi side, what are revenue expectations, or how much money can people expect to make from actually getting these things deployed in the real world?
Yeah, we get that quite a bit. So there's a range to what comes out. So the average is generally held for what we've seen for people that have what we would call a good location, meaning it's a busy retailer or small business that gets, we'll say, foot traffic of at least 100 or more people a day, is 50 gigs a month. So 50 gigs a month. So XNet works strictly based on data flows. It's not based on proof of coverage or anything else. We only get paid for data on Wi-Fi, so that's what we pay out. So every 50 gigs has a multiplier of 50 XNet, and then you times that by the current token price. So that kind of gives you a range of what to expect. So the unit costs $199 for, let's focus on the Pro. The 1,000 XNet, so let's say XNet is 5 cents, you're getting 2,000 XNet, that's about $100. So right now you got $100 to get an ROI just on your purely capital cost to deploy that unit. So to make $100 at that rate, you're gonna make that in a month. So in terms of just net revenue coming in, now you're probably gonna have a revenue split or pay something out. So that's when it gets closer to maybe 2 months. So typically you're gonna get between 100 and 200 is kind of a range. It might be a little high on the lower end, maybe towards $50. And of course, you can earn zero. So, and we have seen that with people who've, maybe accidentally deployed it in their home for personal use. Like these aren't designed for personal or home Wi-Fi. It's not something AT&T is interested in paying for. So those aren't going to earn, could earn as low as zero. But for ones deployed in retail locations or maybe at a home to where outside your window, there's a bunch of businesses, people nearby. Those work really well too. So we had some people say, hey, I installed it at home and actually I'm doing fantastic. I'm making, I just did 10 gig last week. We're like, well, what's different about your house? You're like, well, actually there's a bunch of businesses next to me. I'm in this condo complex right next to this area by this mall. I'm like, well, yeah, you're going to do a lot better there. So I say, 50 gigs is kind of the mark, is a good average. So half are going to make more than that, half are going to make less than that. And that's okay. So my main goal is just to make sure that ROI on that is a crypto ROI, meaning definitely less than 3 months, 6 months at the maximum.
Yeah, it's kind of funny in this crypto world how expectations in terms of upside change dramatically compared to what it would be in like a non-crypto world, which that's a pretty good turnaround time for someone that's buying hardware, especially at the price point. You know, if you think someone says, I have an extra $1,000 to invest into something that can create potential revenues forever, and that's assuming the token price doesn't go up. I know, obviously, you're not really supposed to talk about the token price, but especially with your guys' token economic model, as you keep having people burn the token through this mechanism, that's going to create upward pressure. And so you maybe see those timelines decrease a little bit, but it's really pretty amazing to think. That's a great turnaround time for an ROI.
Yep, that was one of my goals, make it affordable so it's easy to pay off.
Yeah, I love that. Definitely keeps things interesting for people that are buying hardware. You talked about AT&T specifically with the Wi-Fi offload. I know there's been a few other carrier partners specifically on the Wi-Fi side. Can you just give everybody a quick update who maybe hasn't checked in for a little while about some of the other big household names that are doing this offload with XNet?
Yeah. And I'll be specific too. So on Wi-Fi, we work through an aggregation marketplace because that helped us get to market quicker. We're going to be decommissioning that and doing direct deals with all the carriers going forward. We just did that so we could launch sooner. So right now we support, AT&T is the biggest one with 250 million plus accounts, cellular devices out there in the field, and about 46% of basically the share of the cellular market in the United States. But we also have more too. So we also have Consumer Cellular. We also have Cricket Wireless. We also have FirstNet, and which is like first responders, public sector. And then we also have at the very end, Google Fi. So we've got quite a collection there in Wi-Fi. So all of them offload today live. If you buy any of our units from the store, also if you're anyone who is an ISP conversion partner, we also support all those out of the gate as well. So all those are offloading. The ISPs like it because they actually log into their equipment and they see like how many devices are connecting. They can't see who it is or what the data is, but they can see the gross, they can see the total data, which is a little misleading because it includes authentication data as well as speed test data, so it's always higher. But they always like to log in and see it. So we support quite an array of networks. We're going to have more. We're not done yet. I think we're going to do one more in the U.S., and then we're going to start going, and then next is international. We're going to start doing major, at least one major carrier in every country. It'll be one of the biggest ones in each country that we go at. We already have a short list. We already know who we're going to work with, I think, in Canada, who we're going to work with in Mexico, but other EU countries that are out there, usual suspects, you know, UK, France, Germany, et cetera, and several other countries that we're looking at next to. So thanks to the great people that are already on the Extent team. They've already worked with those carriers before, so it's a very easy discussion to have, and we've already had conversations with them. In fact, we've already had carriers tell us, if you get this carrier, we will sign up with you like almost automatically. Because if they do it, we do it. we're like, well, okay, we're going to hold you to your word then, because we're getting them.
You got to love that. You got to love that. And getting buy-in from these ginormous like household names that are long-standing telephony companies with exposure to crypto. For the people that are really excited about the Web3 adoption side, where you talk about doing things that users don't even really realize that this is happening in the background, it's pretty magical to see it happen in real time, especially as quickly as it's happening with you guys.
Who would imagine that AT&T would be paying out crypto in 2024?
You know, yeah. Definitely not on my bucket list, especially when you see, you know, you get the Jamie Dimons of the world and talking like all the nonsense they do about Bitcoin and whatnot. But then when you've got Fortune 100 companies that are doing crypto transactions for their business operations and making their business better at the same time, it's pretty freaking cool.
That's what I love about the space, because it was so obvious to me. I was like, why hasn't somebody done this years ago? I was like, Wi-Fi, it's just, it's quicker, it's easier. It saves the carriers money because they're paying less, but they're, especially this high interest environment right now, they're paying less per gig from delivering it on their network, especially for roaming traffic. It works out with us because we can bring in and help introduce them to this kind of crowdsourced coverage models where anyone can participate. And of course, all the participants can now earn revenue. I'm not going to jump on the passive revenue bandwagon, but I'll say it's passive-ish. Nothing about this I would say is passive for someone who's been running fleets for many years, but it's definitely, if you want to do it on the side, be a weekend warrior, part-time warrior, you know, you can be a full-time Uber driver, be doing this as well, locking up locations while you're mining Hive Mapper and doing, you got Demo in your car and doing other projects as well. You know, so I know a lot of people right now deploy XNet and Helium side by side because we don't compete with each other. We don't have the same partners, we don't have the same strategy. We're complementary now. So you can put radios right next to each other. You can put Wi-Fi right next to each other. No issue whatsoever. And combine those earnings. So it's very useful when for entities that I work with and deploy with, because now they can get more revenue for working with them. And I try to, and that's very valuable, I think, to have a cross project focus in the space. It helps stabilize your revenues. Helium's well known for kind of having jagged revenue cliffs and highs. And I really like, and that's a very hard thing to sell to business partners, because how do you forecast the next hip? You can't. You know what's going to be introduced next week. It's a lot easier to go with, how about data flows? Those are nice, consistent. As long as the rates stay about the same, you can forecast those out and they always go up. Much more simpler.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a little bit tangential from talking about Wi-Fi and your guys' deployment strategy, but for people who may be weekend warriors or they're interested in becoming deployers on the AMA spaces that just happened right before this conversation, you gave a pretty good 1-2-3 sell for people that are approaching businesses. Again, this is a little bit unrelated. Can you talk about ways to position how to sell this to businesses and whatnot? Because I think for people that are getting involved, it can be a bit scary to say, oh, how do I have this conversation? There's this crypto thing. It could be a little bit weird. You broke it down really simply. Can you just restate what you said a little while ago for everybody else here?
Yeah. Happy to do it. And people are free to watch the recording that'll be up soon as well from the AMA today. But I'll restate it very quickly. So here's what I'm seeing. So I work with deployers, and I'm a deployer myself. With that, just to the agreements I've signed and I still honor with my business partners. So I work in the space, you know, every day, just like everybody else. So here's what people on the ground are seeing and what's working for them. So there's three main approaches to closing deals with companies today. And there's three different approaches to pitches. Everyone is different. Find the one that works for you. I'll tell you what other people are doing. and one of these will work for you and help you close deals. The first one is I'm going to improve coverage for your business. So if anyone has AT&T, they're now going to have a fantastic experience at your venue, at your office. See if they bite on that. If they do, you're like, great, I'll give you free equipment. I'll maintain it. You keep all the revenue. They get better service. Everybody's happy. Most business people are smarter than that, and they go for another option, saying, okay, I want a flat rate for having this here. Give me the equipment for free. You service it and pay maybe $10 or $20 a month or whatever you think is agreeable with that. So there's the flat rate payout model. And then the most popular one, which is actually the one that I like the most personally, is the revenue share model. So a fraction of the revenue goes to whoever has that location. You give them the equipment upfront at no cost. You maintain it at no cost. And you pay them monthly, weekly, whatever you feel that you can support. And you can pay them in crypto or cash based on what you're comfortable supporting as well. So those are your three main options. So better coverage, flat rate, or revenue share are your pitches that you're going to do for how you're going to pay them. And find the one that works for you. You may want to do different pitches. For instance, when I go talk to first responders, they don't care about money for the most part. They just want better coverage. But if I go talk to the local, let's say, a restaurant owner, they do care about money. And they'll be like, oh, I can make an extra $20 a month. Hey, you do know I own a franchise of 20 of these. So getting that meeting may be difficult. But I guarantee you, people like making money. You got to find just the right way to pitch it to them that is not salesy. And also doesn't sound too good. You don't want to make it sound like this magic money box just prints money. But make sure to mention the utility of it. Otherwise, it's going to sound too good to be true, which it can be. It's actually extremely attractive right now. So that's the main ways where I come in. And then as far as when they ask, you know, let's say you're doing a revenue share, and they're like, how much do I make? What's working far and above everything else is a 30-day trial. Say, I give you the equipment, you plug it in for 30 days. We see how much it earns. I register it. I'll take the payout for this month. And then we'll see after 30 days, we'll review how it does. And if you're happy with my proposal, and I'm happy with what it's earning, I'll get a contract together, and we'll maybe for the next year, we'll agree to have it here. I will support it. I will replace it. I will troubleshoot it. But if it's a revenue share, I'll give you a portion of the earnings, or if it's a flat rate, I just pay you out. Let's say monthly is the most common arrangement. So, the 30 days works out really well. The biggest pain point is you have to take up front kind of that cost of the $199 unit. $199 is, you know, while it is affordable in the space, it'd be hard to cover that. What I recommend employers do if you're just starting out, start with one unit, get it to pay for itself, and then do two or three. I see a lot of people coming back and doing follow-up orders when I check our back end of order flows coming in. So a lot of people start out with like maybe one or two, then they do maybe 5 to 7, then they do 10 to 12, then they might do 20. And that's okay. Like, they don't feel like you're missing out if you don't order like 20 right out of the gate, because it's going to be hard to put up 20 all at one time. We're not going anywhere. You can always order more, and we're fulfilling them within 2 to 4 weeks. Right now, it's pretty much 2 weeks. I'd love to get us to next day ship maiden, but our logistics is constantly working to make sure that we're keeping up with order flows and keeping everything consistent. It's a lot better than what it was, but it's still not perfect. Once it's perfect, I would love to be able to do shipments within a day. And one day is our order cancellation policy. So you have 24 hours to cancel any order that's out there, like accidentally clicked or quantity's wrong, or you ordered an outdoor when you meant to order an indoor. Mistakes happen, and we're pretty open with that. But once they ship, and especially once we pay the tokens out, you're definitely the one who owns it. And if it's making money, you probably don't want to return it. You just want to put it up somewhere and find more locations, which is what the vast majority of people run into.
Now, I love getting a chance to kind of talk through what that pitch sales cycle looks like, because you can go and say, you know, that at least a third of your customers, or likely a third of your customers, maybe have AT&T in that area. And so being able to say, this will make these customers' experience better. And as you guys onboard more, that'll just become even more attractive and better. But it makes it pretty easy to have that conversation without trying to convince someone of all these ethereal things that just don't even translate into, why would I want to plug this extra device in? How does this make sense to the business side?
Yeah. Is it secure? Is it safe? Yeah, it's AT&T. Why would they want to do something if it wasn't secure and safe? You can trust them. And do they have to do anything? No, they don't have to do a thing. It's better if you have AT&T service, because then you can demo it right on your phone in case they don't have AT&T. Again, you know, usually you've got about a 1/3 chance, you know, that the owner is going to be, you know, Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile is what most people are going to have. So, and also when they ask, are more coming? Yes, there's more coming. I don't have a date. It's whenever they sign the agreement and technical integration is completed. I'm not worried about the, I'm not actually too worried about the agreement. So I'm more worried about all the different, you know, different integrations we got to do, but they're all going fast. And as time goes on, they'll get faster. So our goal is to have every carrier. So we don't want to leave any carrier behind. I want the big three, especially in the United States, starting with AT&T, growing to likely, you know, T-Mobile would be great. And then Verizon, you know, those are the big three I want to have. When will I have all three? I don't know, as soon as I can.
Yeah, that's okay. We don't have to speculate on that. We just know that it's coming. Well, God, we've talked about so many things, from all the incredible updates and progress that you've had to the Wi-Fi unit specifically and sort of what's ahead. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to share before we get a chance to wrap it up?
Yeah, so I wanted to share. So we did share like the big updates from the call today. It's just the latest things that they had is that, you know, CBRS offload is coming in. The CEO, Rich, mentioned the time frame to have data flowing. So expect that in about an epoch. I'd probably hedge that, say maybe two epochs. That's a big announcement. And then there's now outdoor units for sale too. These are professional outdoor units that are now for sale too, and got many more coming into the store. So I'm excited with just new options here. It's like every epoch, we've got some big announcement. It's not like, let's say the last 2 years where it's been, what's the announcement is we're still waiting for the network carrier to sign the agreement. Now it's more like, no, we're introducing this product. We have this big update. We have this big partnership. We have this big deployment. We've got this new program. We've hired these new people. Every week is just on fire. Because I like, I've worked in multiple startups, so I'm very familiar with, you know, what it's like. And this is kind of like the dream time. You're working really hard, but you're getting a lot done. And the only thing limiting what you can do, really the quality of your team. And we've got just some incredible people from the space who've done multiple startups and have been in the crypto industry on multiple projects as well. So I just can't be more excited about where we're going, where this project is going. I feel like it's finally hit its stride. It's just keep executing, keep getting things done, keep landing agreements. And, you know, within a year, you know, being across multiple countries, multiple manufacturers, this is going to be an amazing ride.
Well, we're rooting for you. And as you said, it's been incredible to see where it was even a year ago to where it is today. It's like two separate companies almost, with how much progress
it's like, wait, is this the same project?
Well, for people that want to stay up to date with all of the many exciting changes and progress that you are announcing, where should people be checking Xnet out, following you? Can you tell everybody where to go so they can stay updated?
Yeah, the best place overall is the Discord. And then on the Discord, specifically the announcement section, and then the weekly AMAs, if you have the time to attend those, are going to be your best place for the most up-to-date information. The AMAs have gotten quite large. There's a lot of people attending them now, which is good. We're getting a lot more questions and feedback. Governance meetings are also set up and are also weekly as well, because with all this growth, we want to make sure the community has a voice and gives us direct feedback. And they've actually been very helpful. I'm not active in the governance. I'm only active in Wi-Fi, but I see what they're doing. And we've got some really sharp guys on there who are saying, hey, these tokens came from this pool. I thought they were supposed to come from that pool. Should this pricing be correct? We want to change this, you know, and what is the long-term sustainable model of how this works? So to make sure that there's the right blend of being able to move very, very quickly, but also have the community have a very strong voice and be able to have a direct input and say, we want to do things this way. This is how we want to move forward. We don't want it to make it seem like we're calling all the shots and doing whatever we want in this project. So we've seen that in a lot of other projects that are out there. I think to their detriment, where they weren't held accountable. And that's something I think, you know, as somebody coming in from outside of Xnet, something that I'm happy that they finally stood up and are doing to get that community voice involved. So want to listen to everybody, and we're not going to be successful unless people put this Wi-Fi up and a successful model that's sustainable over 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and even longer. We have no plans to keep expanding and to make this the leading, you know, offload solution for the entire world.
Well, and as you said, crowdsource coverage, which is what you're building, comes from the crowdsource angle. And so having that intentionality behind the governance side of it is exciting for people who have maybe had less than stellar experiences with other projects where they felt like they were rugged, quote unquote, as we say in the Web3 space, or there was just sort of this dictatorship takeover. Having that intentionality, I think, is something a lot of people can appreciate, knowing what has been out there in the past.
Yeah. I hate seeing projects where like, oh, we're just going to outvote everybody and do what we want. What's the point of governance then?
Right. It sort of undermines the entire premise of what we're trying to build. Well, Russ, every time I listen to you talk, I always feel like I learn so many more things. We covered a hell of a lot of content and updates tonight. I really appreciate you coming on, taking the time. Hopefully we'll have more of these conversations on an ongoing basis, because I imagine that there will be, you know, in 6 months, this conversation will already be obsolete based on how much growth and progress you're achieving. But thanks again. We'll wrap it up there. Everybody, make sure you go follow XNet. Go join their Discord. If you want to be a part of the community, that's probably the best place. We'll be sure to link all the social handles, Russ's Twitter, the XNet Twitter. But wanted to thank everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next one.